Heritage. Today is Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. This is Mr. Nice, and you are listening to the Griffin Rundown, a weekly podcast for HCA. I hope that you are listening together on the way to school this morning. This week, we'll talk about upcoming events at Heritage. I'll give an exciting update about the charter. We'll do a good look at a great book with Mr. Harris, the fifth grade teacher in Peninsula. I'll give a construction update. We'll do a joke of the week, and you'll want to stay tuned for an interview with Mrs. Flagel and Mr. Graham about the eighth grade capstone project, which is really good. And the conversation is really good. You won't want to miss this one, Mom and Dad. So first, some calendar items. It is almost spring break. It begins this Saturday and runs all the way through Monday, April 1st, the day after Easter. So our first day back in session is Tuesday, April 2nd. So please don't come on Monday, the day after Easter. We'll see you on April 2nd. And due to recent updated guidance and recommendations from local counties and local county law enforcement, we are going to be closing campuses all day on Monday, April 8th. This is the day of the full eclipse, which is scheduled to happen right around 3 o'clock. And so following the guidance from county law enforcement, all campuses will be closed on Monday, April 8th. Hey, registration for summer camps is now open. We are excited to be offering over 10 different camps this summer. Spots are first come, first serve, so register today. You can find the details and a link to register in the newsletter. The hymn this week is one by Fanny Crosby, and it's "To God Be the Glory." I think it's a familiar tune and a familiar one to many of us, but again, I would encourage you find a version and be listening and singing with your children. Maybe listen at dinner time and learn the first and learn at least one verse together, maybe a couple this week while the kids are also learning at school. Construction update at Pepper Pike. Thank you to those who have come to previous work days. I know the last one was rained out, but there is one this Saturday, March 23rd. Again, please see the newsletter for details, but we've had parents and grandparents and staff and friends all helping out at these days and have got much accomplished. I think the hope is to be outside again. So thank you for coming, those who are planning on it. And again, just an update on what's going on in the building. There is a lot of demo happening. They've now moved from one of the cottages and then into the larger Tudor building. And they've actually moved into the three academic buildings behind that Tudor building and are taking down walls. And I think even in the cottage this week or last week, late last week, they were starting to put new walls up in the cottage where they started demolition. So things are happening. It's all very exciting to see the transformation at Pepper Pike. Charter update. I have an exciting one here for you. We received feedback from the state on all the documents that we submitted back in mid-January, and they are not asking a lot of us. So we have made a few adjustments already, and we are resubmitting this week. And at that point, then the next step will be for our first site visit with the state. So we are so thankful for the progress and happy to be able to let you know that we have heard back from the state. They aren't asking for much clarification, and we're getting that already back to them this week. So we anticipate more movement on this in the near future. And we are making preparations in anticipation of receiving the charter yet later on this spring. So there's much I want you to know. If it feels slow and not like a lot is happening for your eyes, there is a lot going on behind the scenes in the back room to prepare to receive the EdChoice scholarship for your students for next year. And again, if you haven't, one more time, I want to plug, go back and listen to the Griffin Rundown from November 28th when I interviewed Troy McIntosh from the Ohio Christian Education Network. He does a great job of outlining what does it mean for Heritage that we are pursuing the charter, and then also what does it not mean? And because there are some misconceptions out there. So I recommend the podcast with Troy on November 28th. Well, now we are going to welcome into the studio for a good look at a great book, one of our fabulous fifth grade teachers in the Peninsula campus. This is Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, welcome to the Griffin Rundown.
Thank you for having me, sir.
I'm very happy that you're here, sir. Hey, Mr. Harris, before we dive in, just tell me a little bit, how many kids you have? How long have you been at Heritage? Tell me what happens in fifth grade world.
Okay. Melissa, my wife and I, we've been married for nearly 15 years now, and we have three kids. All three attend school here. Mariah is 11, almost 12. Micah just turned 10, and Mia is 7, going on 8. And we've been Heritage parents for a long time now. Mm-hmm. Love it. And I've been teaching here now. This is my third year teaching here, fifth grade. So
third year of teaching fifth grade. And you do, if I'm right, you do, you partner with Miss Webb, also fifth grade Academy teacher. You do double Latin. She does double math. Is that right?
Yes, sir. That is it.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it's good. All right. Well, help me out here. Good luck at a great book. What's the book you want to share with us today?
All right. So we obviously have six books to choose from in fifth grade. And it was hard. This was hard to figure out which book do I want to highlight, you know, for our fifth grade curriculum here at Heritage. And ultimately, I went with what usually kicks off our year, to be honest. It's The Bronze Bow. So The Bronze Bow, it so many spiritual themes that comes with this book. And it's easy to have these amazing conversations with the students throughout. But a little bit of background, you know, it's about a young guy named Daniel who actually witnesses his father's crucifixion by the hands of the Romans. And because of this, right, he is now fueled with this one single passion. He's filled with rage. He wants to avenge his father's death by driving out the Romans from Israel. And he's consumed by rage, anger, revenge, and ends up departing from the village that he lived in. And he joins this kind of these group of outlaws. They would consider themselves rebels, right, for the cause. And they're led, this group is led by a guy named Roche is how you pronounce it.
Roche.
And Daniel's now, you know, years later, living this gruff lifestyle. He lives in the hills and the mountains with these guys. But his plans get disrupted when his grandmother ends up passing away. And he ends up having to go back down to the village to take care of his sister and kind of reacclimate himself into this life, into the society. But he's conflicted, right? Because he's like living a double life where he's beginning to be, you know, he's remembering and yearning for this life back when he was younger, but he's also for the cause, right? He wants to drive the Romans out. He's just leading this dangerous life with all these guerrilla boys, you know, and spying and plotting and again trying to they're impatiently waiting to kind of, you know, make their move. So and on the flip side of it, now you have he's also now being exposed to this guy, the teacher of all teachers. In Capernaum, we see that there's a guy by the name of Jesus. Jesus. Who he finds himself drawn to constantly over and over and over again. And he's finding himself on one hand being drawn to him, but then on the other side, he's upset. He's disappointed. He doesn't understand. He's confused because Jesus doesn't seem to have the same passion to want to drive out the Romans. And Daniel, he's just headstrong. He's stubborn. He's frustrated. And again, he always defaults back to, you know, his anger and rage and this mission that he's on. But Jesus speaks of a different way. And we know the Jesus that we love and that we worship. He turned everything, all these common principles upside down, right? Where we would say if someone wrongs us, we should wrong them back, right? But then we know that in the Sermon on the Mount, which we also get to memorize this year with the fifth graders.
That's right.
It's awesome, right? When we're talking about retaliation and anger and loving your enemies.
Eye for an eye. Yeah,
absolutely, right? Tooth for a tooth, all that language. And then Jesus says, no, turn the other cheek. No, if someone would sue you and take your tunic, give them your cloak as well, right? If he forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. So Jesus is just impressed by us. Not when we just love those who are easy to love, but he's really impressed with us when we love our enemies. So it's great as we're memorizing these verses with the kids and reading this book where it is about someone that is fueled. Because I can tell you right now, whether this is a joke or not, no one is as offended and burned as a fifth grader, right? You know, like, right? Right? The moment that they are wronged, it's they are ready to retaliate. Yeah. And it is that eye for an eye. It's innate in us. And Jesus speaks to the soul. And it's just good to have the correlation and connection between Jesus's actual words and teachings with this amazing historical fiction, biblical fiction book that we read. And it's a great way to start our year off and get into it and have these deep conversations with the kids.
Yeah, it's so good. It's funny that you made the comment about, you know, good for a fifth grader here. As you were talking, Mike, I was thinking, boy, what a great book for fifth grade boys to read, because I think, you know, just in the front office, it seems like the frequent flyers into the office that need to come see Mr. Bond or Mrs. Larson, it's usually when things happen at recess, and it's usually first graders, and then things kind of level out for a time. And then, you know, all of a sudden fifth graders start making an appearance again back in the front office for things that happen at recess. And you know, whatever's going on in the human brain and the young man brain, often at that age, of the retaliation and the I want to win and maybe not all the wisdom yet of how to control that.
Yeah. I think losing helps sometimes. Like the more that we can be humble, and that I think the more that we find ourselves, because it's going to happen, right? Like it's not a matter of, and I can tell you just from my experience this year with, this has been such an amazing year, fun year. They are such a blast, the class. But whenever I have to be very careful when we play games, when we do things, because it turns into chaos, right? Because, you know, if they lose, it's because someone cheated or they're biased or whatever, maybe, right? There's always an excuse, not that I didn't study or they're just better at it than I am.
Right.
And then when they win, right, there is this, I won. I'm in your face. I'm cheering. And I'm just the
because sore, I'm just better.
Right. Yeah. Sore winner, right. Sore loser. Yeah. So there is something that, that we have to nurture into our kids' instruction from scripture to be able to help our kids deal with losing well. And I've learned, I can tell you, me being that kid when I was younger.
You're an athlete. Yeah.
Right, I hated to lose. And I was this, I don't know if it's the short man syndrome, whatever, where I felt like I could be louder about it and just be rude, you know, more rude about it. But it took losing more and more and more and more and more to humble me. And ultimately I started to enjoy whatever it was that I was doing and the pressure that just released from that, because it's easy to find our identity and even these small minuscule things that at the end of the day don't matter at all, in the grand scheme. So,
well, it sounds like a book that I need to be reading. It sounds like a book that, a great one to be reading at home with our kids and just be talking about the Lord Jesus and redemption in him and what he does in the human heart that's angry, right? And probably a good one to start off fifth grade every year too.
Love it. Yeah, yeah. It's awesome.
But... yeah. Mr. Harris, super thankful for you, the work you're doing with the kids.
Thank you, sir.
Love you, brother.
Well, now it's time for your favorite segment and mine. It's the joke of the week. And today, I'm very happy to welcome into the room one of our super smart 10th graders who might also be funny. The jury's out on that. But Emma, do you want to say hi to everybody?
Hi.
Hi. All right, Emma, what is your joke today?
Why did Captain Hook cross the road?
Why did Captain Hook cross the road? I don't know why.
To get to the secondhand store.
To get to the secondhand store. I get it. Because Captain, okay, good one. Hey, where'd you learn that joke?
I actually don't know.
You don't know. Have you told it to all of your kid siblings?
Yes, they all know that one.
And do they laugh?
Most did.
Do they think you made it up?
No.
Okay, that's good. You're not stealing the credit. Hey, you're in 10th grade. You're reading a lot of good things and studying good things. What's the best book that you've read and talked about in class this year?
This year?
Yeah.
Okay.
This year.
Probably The Lost World.
The Lost World. Does that have to do with dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Okay. What happened? Why is that one the one that you chose?
Because I really like fantasy books.
Fantasy one. I don't know anything about it. Give me like the 30-second. What's all I know is now fantasy and dinosaurs.
Well, okay. So there's this guy named Malone, and he's a newspaper writer, and the girl he wants to woo to marry said that she only likes guys who are very adventurous. So he goes to his editor and asks him to send him on an adventure. So he goes and gets his team together, and they go off into the wild of the Amazon, I think. And then they find a bunch of dinosaurs, and they find ape men, and they find a bunch of other things.
Cool. Sounds like Jurassic Park-ish.
Yep. That's practically.
Well,
Michael Crichton stole from the author of The Lost World. Okay. Emma, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yep.
Okay, bye-bye. As we prepare to welcome in our guests today on the podcast, I would just want to preview the topic at hand. And today, we will be discussing the 8th grade capstone project that happens at Heritage. And this is a project that has been in effect for, I think, 4 years. I think this is the 5th. And it is a... I think you'll hear today is a tremendous opportunity for our 8th graders to do some really hard things and to be stretched and to grow. And I know as a dad who has walked through it with one of mine to date, that it was a challenging but such a rich and deep time of growth for my daughter. So 8th grade capstone is a wonderful project for the kids. And so today on the podcast, we're going to be interviewing Mrs. Elizabeth Flagel and Mr. Nolan Graham. Mr. Graham had started the project here 4 or 5 years ago. Mrs. Flagel is currently running with it in Peninsula, and likewise, Dr. Valley is running with it at Bainbridge. But today, very happy to welcome into the studio Mr. Graham and Mrs. Flagel. Well, Mr. Graham and Mrs. Flagel, welcome to the Griffin Rundown.
Great to be here.
Happy Excited. To be here.
Yeah, thanks, very, Denise. Very happy to have both of you back. I think you've both been on before. Repeat visitors. So let's just dive right in then. Will you, each of you, tell me what you teach at Heritage?
This year I teach 6th grade literature and composition and 8th grade composition, which is geared towards our capstone project this year.
And I teach 7th grade humanities, which is our ancient classics, and then 9th grade humanities, which is modern.
Okay. All of the classics, the writing gifts, and the literature gifts. So help me out then. Capstone Project. What is this Capstone Project, and what is the value, and what are the goals of this project? And recognizing that so many of our parents, their oldest kid might be in 2nd or 3rd grade, and they don't even know that we have this project coming. So what is it? What are the values, and what are the goals?
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it today because I think this is something that feels very much like a culmination of so many of our goals at Heritage. And so even if your students are still in the grammar stage, this is what we hope our grammar and logic school stage builds towards. And so it's good to hear. And then also if you have older students who are in the logic school, this is coming at them quickly. And so this is a fun and I think a meaningful conversation to have. Our capstone project is a year-long thesis that the students do. They choose a modern topic of debate. Usually they are hot button, very pro-con. Not always. Some of them are a little bit more open-ended and nuanced, but they form an argument about that, and they create a multi-step process out of that. There's lots of steps. We can go into specifics about what those are, but I think overarching, was designed originally to be the culmination of our Heritage experience because we didn't have a rhetoric school when this was originally formed. And so it was an idea of like, okay, here is this capstone project that you will do as a part of your humanities course. That is, let's take all of these big ideas that we have read, these history, these civilizations that we've studied, these literature books that we've read and discussed, and then also, and probably most importantly, the scripture that we've memorized and studied and learned about. And then let's take that and use all of that knowledge to formulate our thinking on a modern topic. That's, I think, the goal of the project. And now it is still all of those things, but it's also a look ahead to what they will experience in rhetoric school and their senior thesis, which is coming at them faster than we all want to admit, but it's coming. So I think it serves now almost two purposes. as we've continued and as we've built the rhetoric school.
I think the project is amazing. I have not yet met a student or family that has said anything other than it's been a transformative experience for the kids. It is special.
Yes.
One piece of it that wasn't yet mentioned is the, as the students are choosing a topic of modern debate and then being wise by considering it in light of Christ, what has he said in his word? Mm-hmm. And in light of classics, what have great thinkers said? They're also under the guidance of an advisor. Mm-hmm. So students are paired up with somebody that typically is a faculty.
This year we're so blessed to have a wonderful team of faculty administrators. And then we've brought in a few parents, not parents of current students. They're not paired up with their own parents, but some wonderful parents of our grammar school students and logic school students who have experience and also a heart for this type of project. And I should say grandparents as well. We have a grandma on as an advisor this year. So it's a wonderful chance for them to get to meet with an adult and talk individually about their project and receive wonderful targeted individual coaching, but also just from the standpoint of an adult to meet with and talk with, and for them to be able to be mentored by someone who isn't their teacher. And so it adds an extra benefit to the project, just a great depth of practical skills of like, how do I communicate with an adult? How do I email an adult? How do I meet and show up prepared and do all these things? But also just such a gift to the students of getting to meet with these men and women who love the Lord and love what we're doing. So I feel very grateful for them for this project.
So that's exactly what I think is so, so valuable, is like big ideas and sorting through controversial or difficult topics. Like, what better way to do that than in the safety of loving Christian community?
Yes.
Than in the presence of somebody who knows your name, who knows what you like and dislike, and can guide you through the process.
Yes.
Like, so the advisor component is profoundly useful and helpful. And then you have students working on this in the safety of loving Christian community with their teacher, who also knows and loves them. And then you have the blessing of parents overseeing it at home. It's like, I could not think of a better way to think through difficult things than this very project. Like, this is the way to do it.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. I think it's having done it from different perspectives of doing it as an advisor for a few years and then now teaching the class, there's so many, and we'll, I'm sure we'll get into these as we discuss, but there's just so many tangible, practical skills that our students walk away with, but then also just transformative heart and mind. A lot of that in this project as well through multiple different capacities.
So you both have said, and I think it's right, having had one that's gone through it so far, it is a transformational work in the kids. And I am thankful for it for my daughter who went through it. Usually we say that this was a transformational experience, that it was, you know, it changed us for the better in some way. It usually entails that there was something that was a struggle. Right. So, and I think that's probably right. I think most of those parents would probably also say, might have had a comment like, and the tears were worth it.
Yes.
So, maybe talk us through a little bit of the process and you can share some of those values that, or some of those skills that they're also gaining. And then maybe also some of the good hard discussions that you guys have both had with kids on these topics. So maybe share some of the skills that the kids are learning as they go through this process. So maybe walk us through the process, share some of the skills that the kids get, because I don't think we've actually talked about the culmination either of what they get to do at the end.
No.
And maybe what might produce those tears as the parents have talked about it, and then just the value of wrestling through the ideas. So maybe just start at the beginning of the process and walk us through, and it'll help us see the skills and the struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. So the process starts at the beginning of the school year. And what's interesting and new this year is that up until now, this has been a part of the humanities course. So it was an added element to their omnibus curriculum that they did still throughout the whole year, but in a capacity in, Nolan, probably you would say like a smaller capacity as far as class time goes.
Definitely.
So this year, as we administrators and teachers and people who have walked through this before had been processing and thinking through this project specifically, and then also our goal to give our students very tangible and practical continued writing experience. Mm-hmm. We built this new class, which is called eighth grade composition, geared towards this capstone project. And we actually added composition classes from seventh grade all the way to right now, 10th grade and on through that. They look a little bit different. So our seventh grade composition class is geared a little bit more towards literary analysis. This is geared towards research, persuasive writing, and then rhetoric skills on through the high school. So this is our first year doing this project as a full course. This is also our first year doing this at all at the Bainbridge campus, because this is our first graduating eighth grade class at our Bainbridge campus.
And Dr. Valley's owning that.
Correct.
At the Bainbridge, correct? Okay.
Yeah. So I have the benefit of coming behind Mr. Graham and Mr. Hermesman, and then also doing this with Dr. Valley, which gives me such a great springboard to go off of this year. Practically speaking, in August, early August and September, we spend a long time talking about the big picture of what this project is. And then with the help of their parents and myself or Dr. Valley, they choose a topic. We have a lot of times where we switch topics and we move along from there, but we choose a topic. And then practically they work through research, big picture thinking. So some outlining those kinds of conversations, and then also classical research and modern research. And we differentiate between the two of those because we want, and I'm sure we'll talk about this as we continue, we want the heart and the base of this project to be centered in what do we know about the world because of what we know to be true about God, what we know to be true about ourselves, what we know to be true about the way we think about the world. And mm-hmm. I think we want that to be the goal of the project more so than just, oh, we did a really long research project on a modern thing.
Right.
And so we do that. The students find research from, like Mr. Gray mentioned earlier, these great thinkers, the philosophies that they've studied, the history, all of that. They do a lot of research about those things and then modern research as well. And then they formulate outlines. They write an 8 to 10 page paper on all of these things. And then they translate that paper into a around 15 to 20 minute speech that they deliver in front of their families, their peers, and a panel of judges. And so, and mm-hmm. Mr. Neese mentioned earlier, the culminating event of this project is not just the research paper itself, but then presenting those ideas orally in a winsome and just in a winsome and convincing manner, mm-hmm. and then get asked questions by a panel of judges. So definitely hard in a very involved process this year.
Definitely stretching
for
the children, no question about it.
Yeah.
Just before we keep going a little bit, and maybe Mr. Graham, before you hop in, would you share, Mr. Graham, you've taught it for several years. Would you just share a few of the topics that, you know, sure. kids have done mm-hmm. in years past, some of what they were arguing?
We've seen so many good ones. There's a huge range. We've got immigration, abortion. Last year, we had an argument about trains. We've got transgenderism and what to think about that. Transhumanism. It goes on and on. That you can think about, these kids have been thinking through.
I was an advisor for a few different students. One did gun rights, mm-hmm. Second Amendment rights. Another talked about the vaccines, and mm-hmm. that was a few years ago. My daughter last year did hers related to technology and why it's probably not healthy to get a smartphone for anyone under a particular age. So
social media, common topic. One really neat one we have this year is we have a young lady doing hers on beauty and the idea of beauty in a broken world. So what does beauty mean and how has the world distorted that? So that's probably one that's a little bit more open-ended and nuanced. Mm. We have a couple welfare system this year.
Those are good
performance
things.
Enhancing drugs, all these mm-hmm. conversations.
Yeah.
The beauty of all of that is that these are like topics you hear about in articles and books on the news and YouTube, but rarely do you get to see somebody thoughtfully think through these various topics specifically from a Christian lens or specifically with like, hey, let's actually like consider history before jumping into what we should say about pick a topic, border, vaccines, et cetera. Like, tell me what Aristotle has to say that bears on this. It's worth thinking about.
And that's, I think, a really tangible skill I think we see throughout this project of it's hard. You tell an eighth grader, okay, let's what does Aristotle have to say? And the first response they come back with is, well, they don't talk about cell phones. He didn't talk about social media. He didn't talk about, and the answer to that is yes, of course he didn't, but let's talk about, or I have one student who's doing a conversation about social media and peer pressure. And I said, okay, so, but how many times in literature, in philosophy, in thought, in the Bible, do we have ideas and thoughts and truth about what do we do when we feel pressure? What do we do? How do we behave when we are being asked to do something we don't want to do? And so, no, it's not specifically black and white tied to their particular topic, but such a rich conversation of we move out of the black and white and into these, the gray area of, no, we're having conversations about what is truth and what does it mean to be a human and what does it mean to live in the world? And how do we take these ideas that aren't 100% directly tied to my idea? That's a big hurdle for them to overcome. But how do I have conversations about my topic in light of all of these things that I know to be true?
And with that, I would just say the basic idea is we want to train students how to think.
Yes.
We're not trying to tell them what to think. The mm-hmm. point is we want young men and women who can like process the world that they're living in.
Yes.
All the pain, all the joys, all the complex ideas, and like go live wisely in it. That's what God has called us to do.
Yes.
That's Hebrews 5, whatever it is. Yeah, that's the idea. So
to your point, a year ago, the Heritage admin team had a friend come in and was leading us through some classics. And I remember distinctly sitting, you know, and as Mrs. Flagel and Mr. Graham were just saying, you know, the classics do bear on yes. these topics. That's the reason we read them.
Yes.
Right. They may not talk about cell phones or social media, but I remember last year mm-hmm. a gentleman came in and led us through one of Plato's dialogues. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting at the end and thinking, that seems more relevant to today than probably what was even more so to him at the time, because the dialogue was some guy was in a competition and was trying to convince people of something. And, you know, in the course of the dialogue, the speaker was trying to get him to understand just because you have a bigger mouthpiece doesn't make you any wiser in this mm-hmm. conversation than the rest of us.
Yes.
And just like, okay, he may not be talking about social media and influencers,
yeah.
but I think it's actually more relevant today than it was a few thousand years ago than when mm-hmm. he wrote it.
Yeah,
yes. And I also, I think we live in a society and a culture that is so quick to whatever I'm thinking and feeling right now determines the way I view the world. And I think one of the biggest benefits of this project is we all know that people are governed by their worldview and the way that they think about the world. And we know that when our students go out into the world that we live in, they will be presented with many different ways to look at the world, many different ways to find identity, many different ways to determine who am I and what am I supposed to be doing. And like Mr. Graham said, we want them to be good critical thinkers. We want them to see, okay, here are the many incomplete worldviews I could accept, but how does that compare to the complete worldview and the truth that I know from the Bible and these things that I've studied? And I think examining men and women and thinkers who have come hundreds of years before us is a wonderful way to get your own brain out of what do I think about this in this particular moment. So I think that's an invaluable takeaway that they learn from this project.
That's right.
Mr. Graham, and we've talked about this a little bit, but Mr. Nish, you mentioned struggle. And I think mm-hmm. aside from the things we just mentioned, that is probably one of my favorite parts about the project is not the suffering and the pain, but,
yes.
but the feeling at the
lucky
end.
Yes, this yes. year.
Yes. They are stuck with me. No, but the feeling of I've jokingly in moments of levity said to my eighth graders this year, if you're waiting for this to not feel hard, you're procrastinating. Mm-hmm. And I think that is said with some joking, but also no, this is a hard project. There's no way around that. This asks a lot of you. Mm. This requires you to do some things you've never done before. There's no way around making this easy. And I think if we're all being honest, we can examine our own selves and we want things to be easy. We want things to come quickly. We want to not have to work that hard. That's our sinful nature. And I think this project, there's always a panic moment. I think for everyone hits it at a different time, but that reckoning of struggle actually is good.
Mm-hmm.
And hard things are good because not only do I recognize that it's hard, I recognize I'm going to have to grapple with this. I'm going to choose to do it anyway. And then I have this wonderful product at the end that of course may not be perfect. Of course may not be, I mean, we hope our students are better writers when they're 12th graders than they are now, but
sure.
that we deliver this wonderfully thoughtful product at the end. And we look at it and we go, that was really hard, but I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good sense of pride that comes from that. And from recognizing I struggled, but I am better on the other end of it than I was at the beginning. And I think that is a really great goal of this and a side benefit of this product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for a lot of students in all the years that I led the project, it was not uncommon for the average student to find a lot of difficulty after they chosen their topic, mm-hmm. after they had got some books together, after they had printed their research, mm-hmm. and then they had tried to begin an outline and they found, well, I think I got this. So they put a bunch of pieces together, mm-hmm. but transferring an outline into coherent, logical thoughts, that can be real difficult for students at any age. I mean, for adults.
Yes.
But when you know that you have to turn that paper in and then stand in front of a whole audience dressed up and everyone's going to be looking at you, mm-hmm. like, that's when it becomes very real. Post-Christmas, like leading yes. into April, it's like, oh, wow, just in a few short weeks or months, I'm going to be standing in front of my peers and everybody. They're going to be looking at me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes a challenge.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, can I do this? The answer is, if you work hard, you will succeed.
Yes.
That's actually true.
Yes.
That's why this project is so beautiful. You're literally the expert on a topic in front of an audience. And that's a cool experience.
Yes.
To be the one that we look to, but you have something to say. Mm-hmm. That's a great experience.
Yes. Yeah,
that's really good. I don't know about you, but my experience wasn't that I had an advisor that I met with every 2 or 3 weeks, or even if it's just monthly initially,
yes.
right, to guide me through the process and to help me. Right? It's great that they have their teacher, right? And
yeah.
that's the main source that they look to, but also the fact that there's an outside adult who's walked through these things in life before too. I remember my first research project when I was in middle school way back. Like, I was on my own.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, the teacher did her thing, but there was no other outside adult that was involved, invested, and helping me think through it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's really valuable.
Yeah. It's an immense gift to the students and to whoever's directing the capstone at the moment, because it's just an extra
yeah.
help with mm-hmm. them one-on-one, which is a really great
yeah.
topic for them.
Yeah, actually, and I remember a different one I was advisor for last year, and she did her topic on socialism and the ills of socialism and why it's bad and could be worse for America. And I remember a few times sitting with her and listening to her go through the whole entire speech. And just, again, the fact that they had the opportunity, apart from even mom and dad and their classmates, to sit in front of another adult and stand and deliver before they go up front. It's very valuable.
Yes.
Yeah. You've given it a lot of thought in the structure of it.
And I think also just some of the tangible skills of, okay, deciding what I'm going to do, researching, figuring out, okay, I've done research, but did I do research on the right things? Mm-hmm. Do I have things included that I need? And so many of these skills that they will use on a practical level on their future research projects. But then also, and I read, I think it was a survey a couple of years ago that I think it's like top three biggest fears of people in the United States is public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the biggest things we do well at Heritage in the classroom is from a very young age, they are up in front of the room, they're talking, they're having conversations, they're presenting their ideas, even if it's in a group or by themselves. And I think this project really speaks to that as well of, no, you are standing in front of a room full of people and you are an expert and you are talking about things you know and you have thoughts to share. And then you're getting asked a question you're not prepared for, but you know a topic well enough to be able to come up with an answer that is thoughtful and expresses your ideas well. And I think that is just such a wonderful benefit that I for certain never had at this age. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time I went and saw, I was an advisor the first year that we did it, but I had only been working with my one student, went to the event, and I came home and told my husband, I was like, that is potentially one of the greatest things I've ever seen, because it's just, you sit there and I don't think there's any parent or teacher in the room that has a completely dry eye, because you're like, what a wonderful thing that one, our students have done and the tears are worth it. You know, this was hard and we did it, but also that we have eighth graders who can communicate these ideas and communicate them well, I think is just a wonderful testament to the thought process behind the project.
I am impressed every single year.
Yes.
And I will say, like, if you're a parent at home thinking, boy, this sounds really great, I don't know if I could do that. Hey, join the teachers who are leading it.
Exactly.
I was certainly there before mm-hmm. I began the life of heritage, the life of leading students and teaching students. And now I've had to speak publicly with my own class and in other instances. We can do it. We have to be trained to do it. It's not natural for many people, but you can get there. And that's what we're doing with our students, teaching them to speak well.
That's right. And I know that you've actually trained them when they're up front and they've delivered their speech, their persuasion, and then they get questions mm-hmm. from the panel, because I've sat on the panel, and I know that you've trained them to say, or to actually stop and be silent.
Yes.
And then to say, you're asking me, right? Or to reiterate the question back, right? To make sure that they understand, is this what you're saying? Mm-hmm. Give them, and then be silent again and be thoughtful and then reply. Like, you've trained them very well to not just start speaking immediately.
Yeah, let's think and process. What are they asking? And what are my actual thoughts about mm-hmm. what they're asking? And if I don't know the answer, that's okay. But how can I still attempt to thoughtfully respond? And that doesn't happen immediately. And so that's a skill.
I think that captures well, like, one of the heart, the thrust of the project is like dealing with things that are deep and the grittiness of life. It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. So much of our world is like appearances. So much mm-hmm. of our world is looking good or making sure you don't look bad. Mm-hmm. That is not the point of this. It's not even like close to the point of it.
No.
The point is like deal with the meat and be okay with dealing with the meat of it. And it is totally okay to not totally understand. Mm. Hey, none of us do.
Yes.
But let's dig there. Like, let's live there. That is so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been on the panel before where students actually said, have been honest in saying, you know, I hadn't thought about that.
Yes.
And I don't know exactly how to answer it, but I might say something like this. And you just sit there stunned of the wisdom of the 13-year-old mm-hmm. or the 14-year-old who was able to say, you know, just be honest in front of people and not just blurt out the first thing that comes to mind.
Yes. And the level of humility that comes with that, which is also something that we hope. There is a good sense of earned pride in this, but there's also a sense of, I don't know all the answers, and that's okay. And it's okay to express that. It's okay to say, I'm going to think about that, because that is the point. We want to train critical thinkers who approach a problem from the top, looking at all of the different possibilities, not just whatever comes to my mind immediately.
That's right.
One last thing I'll say on it is that it is amazing what is produced at the end. It's not always what you would expect. You know, the students who raise their hand a lot, you know, the students who sound very like brilliant, eloquent in class and all of that. Mm-hmm. And lots of times that's exactly what they produce at the end. What's amazing is the kids that have been silent, you know, largely throughout mm-hmm. the year, but who have been thinking through the process and working hard. And they end up like just mesmerizing the audience and coming out of their shell in a way that you couldn't anticipate it. Like, but it happens because there's so much, I don't know the word for it, but like life-giving content here. There's so much life-giving context. It is an amazing thing to see what comes out of it.
I agree. And it's just a wonderful experience, especially the students who put the work in and are willing to either say, oh, I've procrastinated and now I need to catch myself up, or I have thoughtfully considered this and worked hard mm-hmm. this whole time. And then to be able to feel the feeling of, oh, I had answers. I did. I was so nervous I wasn't going to have answers, but then I stood and I had answers. And I think that's just a wonderful thing as an adult to watch and say, when I was their age, I don't think I could have answered that question. Yeah. Oh, it's especially not as eloquently as they just did, or to admit, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. This is probably what I would say. Mm-hmm. I think that that's just a beautiful thing to see in a 13 or 14-year-old that I definitely did not have myself.
So, that's right. Yeah. Through my master's program, I never had this.
100%.
I never had to do anything like this. And I'm assuming you guys didn't have to.
Nope. Nope. Not at all.
Yeah. Well, no doubt it's a valuable experience. I'm thankful for the leadership of both of you in giving shape to the program, casting the right vision and goals for it and executing it, because amidst all the hardship and struggle is where we grow. And we know that. So very thankful for you both.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right.
Mr. Graham and Mrs. Flagel, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Neese.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Griffin Rundown. As always, it is a pleasure to partner with you to cultivate our children to be lifelong learners who think and live for the glory of Christ. We'll be taking a break from the podcast for the next two Tuesdays, and I encourage you to use that time to catch up on earlier podcasts that you may have missed. But with next week being spring break, we know most people won't be listening. So, and then on Tuesday, the 2nd is our first day back, and we think it probably won't be top of mind for many. But until then, we wish you a very joyful and restful spring break, and more importantly, much joy as you celebrate the resurrection of our Savior, King Jesus. Until 3 weeks from now.